Thanks for listening to this sermon recorded at Holy Innocents Episcopal Church during one of our principal services. This sermon was based upon the lectionary readings for the day. To stay connected at Holy Innocents, friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or check us out on the web. Thanks for listening, and stay connected.
I recall a class that I took while a student at Sewanee. It was on the theology of creation and its relationship to ecology and economics. One of the most significant signs of hope in such a class was the fact that an economist from the liberal arts college and a professor of theology from the seminary co-taught the course. Often, our university departments become so insular that they forget that the very root of the word university, like universe, supposes that their subjects somehow fit into the overall picture of things. Even, or perhaps most especially so, in all of their respective particularity and diversity. This is to say that mathematics and science are to be in conversation with the humanities and the social sciences. It does us well to remember that university departments developed historically with the understanding that theology was the queen of the sciences. Or perhaps we might think of it as the glue that held all of the departments together. A contemporary thinker explains the relationship between the sciences and theology in this way. He says that knowledge gained and learned is like gushing water. It's full of energy. And theology takes this knowledge and turns it into wine, something Episcopalians can surely agree with. Theology looks at what is learned from natural observation and puts it in the perspective of an eternal and unifying love. And in this process begins to discern God's handiwork throughout the created order. People of faith have the task of proclaiming to the world that it is an integrated whole. It is a universe, utterly dependent on and held together by the generosity, care, and creativity of God. We do not espouse a faith that is somehow unconnected to the rest of the world or the rest of our lives. Instead, we're able to say that our faith makes sense of the world. It makes our relationships and work and our notions of duty and honor intelligible. Through our own practices of prayer and coming together for Holy Eucharist, we do not leave the world behind. We bring it to the altar, and in turn, we begin to see it all in a new light. We're empowered to feed the hungry, to enter into committed relationships with one another, to grow in political virtue and care for creation. We're prepared to become more fully human in every way conceivable as we grow together in the spirit of the new human, the new Adam, Jesus Christ. Some might think that the Christian religion and its declaration that God has made himself known in the life, transfiguration, death, and resurrection of Jesus has little to do with things of this world. They might conceive and even believe that God has quite a lot to do with our souls after life, and this is true enough, but not a great deal to say about our world and how we should begin to make sense of it. The notion that religion is not concerned with the things of this world is made manifest when universities compartmentalize their subjects in such a way that science is no longer in conversation with theology, or declarations of the human being make no reference to capital B, being. What happens in this kind of university setting, and this setting that I'm using is just a microcosm, really, of how we get on doing business in every other area of our lives, is that religion becomes a private little subject off in the corner, that's not concerned with politics and economics, science and the serious things of the world. Religious faith becomes a private opinion with very little connection to the way we go about organizing life in the real world. The account of the Transfiguration, interestingly enough, has a great deal to offer so as to counter this dangerous and inaccurate notion that Christianity is simply a private and individualistic matter unconcerned with the things of the world. To be sure, quite a number of modern Christians, influenced by the secular opinion that faith is not concerned with the real stuff of the world, would prefer to skip over the Transfiguration because it seems a little bit embarrassing. After all, a story of a human glowing with light on a mountain? Well, that will only strengthen the world's opinion that religious stories really have little to do with reality. On the other hand, some Christians, accepting a compromised little spot in the serious world of real things, will so overly spiritualize the story that they'll make it about personal salvation and the afterlife. I think it far more faithful to the gospel to take neither of these approaches, to pass it by in embarrassment or to individualize it. But to instead allow the account of the Transfiguration to enliven our imaginations, deepen our faith, as we labor to see all worldly things in their relationship to the triune God. The Transfiguration at once holds together the eternal mystery and otherness of God. The disciples fall down before the weight of it, while simultaneously showing the nearness and intimacy of God in our midst, shedding forth eternal glory and light within time, in a place, in the midst of community, fishermen, and in history. While Jesus is praying in a thin place on a mountain, a landscape where God has made God's self known before, his face changes. The disciples encounter the eternal glory of God in the face of a human being. God's timeless beauty and meaning are concerned with entering into history, into the stuff of this world, and drawing it together. In our own encounter with Jesus on the mountaintop this morning, we're invited to begin perceiving the glowing excess of things in our midst. With eyes to see, we can begin to make sense of the world in all of its strange particularities as being shot through with the unifying glory of God that has been disclosed in a human face. The beauty of God who has created all things is made manifest in a man who humbled himself to share our human nature and to bring us and all of creation back to its source. Our vocation as Christians and as human beings is to take all that we are, all that we do, with all of our extraordinary diversity, and see it as actively participating in God's beauty and delight. It's quite a difficult thing to do because we like to keep bits of ourselves and our world out of the transfiguring light of God. But this spiritual and worldly work is nothing less than true freedom. For us to hear the account of the Transfiguration seems utterly appropriate on the last Sunday after the Epiphany, as the stars of Christmas begin to fade and we embark on the journey into the desert of Lent. We're coming down the mountain and discerning what it will be like to allow the light we have seen to flood into every corner of our lives and our world. During this journey down the mountain, as we seek to become more Christ-like, we will become more fully human. And our relationships, our politics, our economics, and our care for the environment can be transfigured to reflect the beauty of the new human being disclosed on the mountain. As we prepare to receive Holy Communion, let us open ourselves to the possibility that God's transfiguring glory concerns all things, and nothing is left untouched by the beauty and splendor of triune love. All things hold together in this love, this unifying love. Amen.